along. There'll be no more sobbing when he starts throbbing his own sweet song. Wake up, you sleepyheads, get up.
The Red Robin podcast is powered by Budget Tyres Auto Centre, the only car specialist trusted by supporters, players and club officials. Head down to Leeds Road and check them out for all your motoring needs. Hello and welcome to the latest Red Robin podcast weekly. Joining me this week are podcast regulars Dan Craft and Graham Turner as we look ahead to Friday night and our boom or bust clash with the Lee Leopards. We reflect on the news that SKD has been named in the Super League Team of the Year for the second season in a row, and we try and make sense of the shortlist for this season's Super League Coach of the Year. All this and more on this week's Red Robin Podcast Weekly. Good evening, Dan. Good evening, Graham. Graham, I'll start with you.
Evening, John. Very well. How are you?
Yeah, very, very good, Dan. Better to be fashionably late than not here at all, isn't it, Dan?
No, just on time, weren't I? Right on time.
Just on time. I'll tell you what. Let's rewind the clock and let's go back to Wakefield last Friday night. It was a result that we all hoped would get, you know, let's be honest, we all expected we would get. But Graham, ultimately, it didn't go our own way for long spells of the game. But ultimately, the class of the Robins shone through at the end.
Yeah, I think for those that were there, it was the result. If you just looked at the result, you'd think it was very one-sided. But I think we started well, got on the board early, which was always good for the confidence. Then we seemed to step away from what had been working. We entered into a bit of a scrappy phase, and it wasn't as clear cut at half time via a performance as we would have liked. And ultimately, the lads picked it up in the second half. The bit that worried me in the first half that stood at half time to chat to the kids that I went with was the performance we put up there isn't at the intensity level that we need to be at for playoff football. And we were almost stooping in part, certainly in that second part of the first half. Robert stooping to Wakefield's level and putting silly mistakes in, making wrong decisions. Those are the sorts of things that you won't get away with in playoff football. So it was good to see that after half-time they came out with a bit more intent, a bit more purpose. And apart from a brief look-in, I think we were completely dominated that second half and scored some fantastic tries. Put a huge dent into that points difference that ultimately got us over the line for a home tie on Friday evening, instead of a trip away to lay up the M62 on a Friday evening.
Yeah, and Dan, I mean, it's always tough, isn't it? Because especially for the Robins, where we only go into games where you it's not will we if we'll win, it's by how many points. Normally, it's reserved for the early rounds of the Challenge Cup. Obviously, many Rovers fans travelled over. I tell you what, Dan, I'm just looking at you now, right? And you've got a cat on your shoulder, right?
Yeah.
you're like
the poor man's pirate.
Yeah, poor man's pirate with that cat on your shoulder.
He's off now. Yeah.
Like anyone who's listening on podcast, Dan's got on his screen. He had a cat right on his shoulder then. So yeah, that threw me off. But no, what I'm saying is, Dan, normally Rovers fans don't go into games expecting to win and then put points on the board. It's more if, or you know, Wakefield was a different game, wasn't it? And ultimately, that they came up trumps in the end. And that second half spell from Mikey Lewis, especially when Jez Litton came on, it was a real spectacle.
Yeah, it's not something you usually experience in a Super League game, is it? Usually, it's right. We need to win and then focus on how much it's. But going into the game, I think you'd be hard pressed to find anybody that thought Wakey were going to win that. I think one of the main things for us was the result at Lee last week. It was when I catch 22 is where you wanted Wakey to win because it means that we could pip Lee on actual points. But I think the fact that they sent them down knocked the stuffing out of Wakey. They put up a fight, didn't they? As it's a game at the end of the day. They weren't there to be beaten, so they put up a fight. But I think after we sort of weathered any sort of fight they had in the first 20, 30 minutes, we then sort of blew them away, didn't we? It was just weather the storm and then pass the ball around them. That seemed to be the tactic. And I think Willie Peters even said that in his post-match interview, and it worked.
Yeah, and Graham, I mean, we spoke about it pre-game in terms of don't look at the scoreboard. It's all about going through the processes that Willie Peters has, you know, instilled in the side throughout the whole season. And the scoreboard will take care of itself. I mean, at half time, the score's what, 18-6. And to be fair, Wakefield will come out fighting, aren't they? They'll come out having a go, you know. But let's not forget, they are a relegated side. And ultimately, it was Rovers who just stuck in there. And then when the you know, a player like Jez Litton comes on with a pace, we saw Michael Lewis, once he got the ball, he got into open space. Wakefield sort of fell off and you know, the points, we're scoring at will in the end.
Yeah, and I think that goes back to the point that Dan's just made, that Willie Peters made, was sticking to the process. We scored some great tries, don't get me wrong, and from, you know, from deep. But that was part of the process, was to play. There weren't sort of too many outrageous plays where you think we're absolutely trying to play Harlem Globetrotters here and forcing it. It was all well constructed, and the tries we scored were created by us rather than mistakes being made. So I think it was testament to that mantra that Willie Peters has been going around, trusting the process. And for me, just in that game, it was evident when we stepped away from that process that Wakefield sort of got on top of that 10-15 minutes and they had a decent spell. They scored points, and we sort of dropped away with those errors and poor decisions in terms of what we were doing. But once we had that half-time, that reset, and got back on it, then the whole process, yeah, just kicked into play. And look, they were there for the beating, don't get me wrong. They were a beaten team early on, but they showed some heart. It's going to be the last Super League game for a little while. So they had a lot of pride to play for in their performance. And look, the result was well against them, but you've still got to beat the team that's put in front of you, whether they're up for it, down for it, or anywhere in the middle. So we can only do what we can do, and that was evident when we played with ball in hand. We showed what we can do as an attacking threat from all areas of the field, and hopefully that just gives us a massive shot in the arm for our attacking play being good, because defensively I thought we were pretty good again on Friday evening, backed up by the nil-in we put against Salford the week before. So I think the signs are all there. We now just need it to all come together for hopefully three more games.
Yeah, definitely. And great to see so many people on YouTube tuning in. Michael Morton, regular. Dawn Kirby, Crane Escrow, and Bazza tuning in from Turkey. Can't believe he's spoiling his holiday by tuning into the Red Robin podcast. He's got a cold effort, so sit back and relax while you enjoy the Red Robin podcast. Dan, it wasn't Rovers' strongest starting lineup, was it? Of course, Dean Hadley, he got injured in the warm-up. We saw Yusuf Aydin come in to take his place. Kane Lynette, Rhys Kennedy were missing as well. I mean, to be fair, we didn't seem to miss them too much, did we? The forward line of Wakefield gave a good go, but ultimately they showed where they are in the league table. I mean, there's 10 try scorers. Mikey Lewis, Jez Litton got two, Ryan Hall, Matty Staughton got two, Brad Schneider got two, Tom Opacic, Jack Walker, Schneider with eight goals. You know, we was fearful of being able to get the result, and ultimately, come the end of the 80 minutes, it was almost like, why were we worried? Because some of the rugby that we played in the end really prevailed for the Robins. When you saw Hadley injured and you saw Matty Staughton lining up in the second row, was you worried, or was you thinking, do you know what, it don't matter who plays in that forward line, we'll do a number on them?
Yeah, to be honest, I think I could have played in that forward line.
Well, you're big enough.
I'm getting there, aren't I? No, I think he started as a second row, wasn't it? It was only Tony Smith that tried to reinvent him as a prop forward, wasn't it? But yeah, I think he slotted him well, wasn't he? It was a doubt anyway, was Staughton, wasn't he? He was looking at bringing in for Ryan, and Willie Peters said Staughton was poorly in the week, wasn't he? So he's obviously caught it off Salford, haven't we? Poorly, sickness bug. But yeah, I think looking at our squad on paper compared to their squad, 19th, 20th, 21st, 22nd men could have stood in and would have still, you want to swap them out for anybody on their team, would you? So I think Yusuf Aydin did put in a really good shift. I was impressed with him starting, obviously grabbing a couple. But yeah, I think, to be honest, I think Dean Adley's he's not in the end of the squad, is he, for this week, or is he?
No, his injury's carried on. He's not recovered.
But like Lynette, I think they could have played. They could have played if we needed them. But I think we had enough in depth, didn't we, to get the result. I think the main thing for us on Friday night was watching what Lee were doing, really, wasn't it? I mean, he even had it at one point when we scored a try. Ryan Hall's coming over and he's asking the fans how many we need to how many they need. His fans shouting four more. That was what it was, wasn't it? I know Willie Peters said he wasn't watching the league game, really. I didn't have his eye on it, but everyone did, didn't they?
Yeah, and ultimately, it didn't really matter, did it? To be fair, though, Graham, I think the damage was done when we beat Lee at home after the Challenge Cup. That was the result that influenced the score. Like, you know, yeah, we put numbers on Wakefield, but actually it was that result against Lee at home where we put them to the sword. And that was ultimately, I think, the difference between Lee finishing where they did and us finishing where we did.
Yeah, and I guess you can look back throughout the season and every team will pick up a particular game. So for us, Lee at home, you know, we should have had 2 points there and wouldn't have been in this position come the last game of the regular round. So you can look back, and I'm sure each team...
No, I mean that the one after the Challenge Cup where we
put... No, absolutely. I'm just going back to the be-all and end-all wasn't Friday night, it was what's gone on in the season. And, you know, the league table doesn't lie. So if you finish top, you finish top. If you finish bottom, you finish bottom. But agreeing that performance that we put in against Lee after the disappointment of 2 weeks before that at the Challenge Cup, that was a catalyst to show that we've blown that out of our system. And dare I say, since then, we haven't looked back in terms of performances and results. And we've gone, was it 5 on the bounce now? So... We've shown that's not a hangover, albeit the Saints game the week after was a little bit of a blowout. But since then, performances wise and results wise, I think we've been, you know, one of the form teams in the comp.
Yeah, definitely. And I tell you what, Dan, following on from that, 5 on the bounce from the Challenge Cup disappointment. One player was coming for, he came in for a little bit of stick prior to the Challenge Cup final. Even including the Challenge Cup final. Is he mature enough? He seems to get into the... He seems to be a bit of a grub. He don't concentrate on his game. Well, I tell you what, one player who I think's really, really responded to the challenge thrown down to him is Mikey Lewis. I mean, the stats from the Wakefield game are unbelievable. 1 try, 4 assists, 14 tackle busts, 6 clean breaks, 19 carries, 278 metres. I mean, that second half, Michael Lewis was almost slicing through that Wakefield defence at will. There was one time where I think it was Sean Kennedy, or was it Ryan Hall, who went absolutely mad at him for not passing the ball, and he still managed to get up and go over the line. But, you know, in general, since that Challenge Cup final and maybe before that, Michael Lewis has really stepped up to the plate, and he's showing the form of somebody who maybe should be in the England reckoning come the Tonga series.
Yeah, he was probably rightly so criticised. I think the thing that he's sort of stamped out his game, and you'd imagine something's been said behind closed doors, is, yeah, he's already been the cheeky little halfback, you know, rubbing someone's head when they drop the ball, etc. But he was taking it too far, and it was costing us penalties. It was just something he needed to stamp out his game and just concentrate on playing his rugby, because he's a very good rugby player when he plays. I think that I don't like to criticise people. I think Rowan Milnes with Mikey at halfback, or when Mikey was at fullback, I think we missed a trick in Mikey in there with Schneider. I think we obviously Mikey Lewis, he get suspended, or no, it was the HIA, wasn't it, after the Hull game. So he missed a week, and obviously Rowan Milnes came in with Schneider and he didn't seem to get back in the reckoning after that. But I think if we'd have got him back in after that in the halves with Schneider, we could have seen what we've seen for the past 5 games. We could have seen that earlier. And hindsight's a wonderful thing. But yeah, I think the fact he's had Schneider to sort of take some pressure off him in the halves, he's not having to do everything himself. I think that's been a big thing for him, and he can just concentrate on getting himself back to where he was. He's only 22-year-old, isn't he? So he's going to make mistakes along the way. But yeah, he's definitely shown why he's one of the first names on the team sheet, hasn't he?
Yeah, and Graham, I mean, I posted on social media today the point scorers for the Robins. I mean, unbelievably, Brad Schneider is our top point scorer. 82 points he's scored since he's signed for the Robins. Michael Lewis is second on 78. Lachlan Coote, he's on 60. He's in third. Of course, Ryan Hall, top try scorer, he's on 56. But, I mean, unbelievable effort from Brad Schneider. He scored two tries against Wakefield. He's kicked 8 goals. He's a player. I mean, we've talked about it on the podcast previously. He oozes a bit of class, doesn't he? He goes again, you know, through his game quite effortlessly. But what I've noticed, he's got that bit of power on him. He's got that little step, and he does remind me a little bit of Dobbo in the way that he. A little sidestep, a little jink to the line, and he'll go over. And also, he's not afraid to take a tackle and take on, you know, what might come his way. And he's Penrith. I mean, yeah, don't get me wrong. He's going to have to be really good to challenge their halves to force his way into the side. But they are getting a very, very good player. And his spell at Hull Kingston Rovers has served him very well, I think.
Yeah, it has. And I think as well, for anybody that doesn't realise, he's deceptively tall as well. I think he's about 6'2", which is quite unusual for a player in the halves. And physically, he's got the stature to go with it for a relatively young person as well. So I think he's only 22 still.
Same age as Mikey. I mean, yeah, I think people forget, this might be my rudimentary maths, but we've probably got the youngest at the moment halfback partnership in the whole of the competition, and that seems to have gone amiss.
Absolutely, and again, it's two young halfbacks developing their game for what we see now. We're hoping that for us, Mikey gets even better than he is, and obviously, I'm sure many Rovers fans will keep an eye on Brad and the way his career progresses back in Australia when he goes back, and see if he gets those opportunities, even if it's just to learn at the minute from the people in front of him. His time will come, and if he's this composed now, and yes, he's made a couple of errors, and he will learn from that as well. Because as Dan said, he's still a young man, but the prospect of them, and again, like you said, Jono, with him being comfortable with ball in hand, he's comfortable to take on the line. He's actually quite strong in defence as well. He's not afraid to do his defensive duties, which. Sometimes the halves are just hidden right on the edges, out of the way. But he's not afraid because of his physical presence. I think he's quite competent in that defensive side of the game as well, which again strengthens up an area which perhaps for some teams isn't as strong because of the lack of defending they expect from their six or seven. But I think just jumping back to Mikey and to the point made around. As somebody had a word with him. If you think back to how Minchella was at the beginning of the season, and Peters has openly admitted, and Minchella's openly admitted that they had words together about the levels of performance, what was expected. And, you know, Peters has said that Minnie went away and developed himself, worked hard, fought his way back. And now I don't know anybody who would have him as one of the first names on the sheet every single week. So if that type of thing is happening behind the scenes, you've got to credit Peters and the staff for doing so, because it looks like it's having the same effect on Mikey that it had on Minnie, and that's only going to benefit the team and the way we play, because as Dan Wright quite rightly said, he's a fantastic player we all love to see, but we love to see the bits that he did on Friday night, not the bits where he's getting himself into mischief and potentially giving away penalties, affording the referees to make a decision around whether he's infringed or not. He seems to have, dare I say, learned from that really, really quickly and parked all that. And now is again showing what we want to see of the Mikey Lewis of Hull KR.
Yeah. Another player as well who came for a bit of criticism at the start of the season was Matty Staunton as well, wasn't it? Who I think Willie Peters had to have a word with him about what he expects. And I mean, he's a player who's responded really well. There was three players in the team of the week. I think Matty Staunton, Mikey Lewis, and the other one was...
Jez Litton,
yeah. I mean...
Not bad for 20 minutes work.
I was going to say, I mean, it's funny, really, because when you look at Jez's stats, and, you know, it's a bit unfair. His stats aren't great for the 25-minute cameo that he had. I mean, albeit he scored two tries. He only had four carries. But in them four carries, he had an average gain of, what, 25 metres? Unbelievable, really. But he backed up, and he did what he did. But to be named in the team of the week, I mean, we're going to come on to Super League and how they adjudicate who's the best players, etc. and stuff. So I think there's a bit of a few anomalies in there. But my final word on Wakefield and Rovers, and I don't know if you guys agree. I saw you both there at Wakefield on Friday night. In terms of an elite sporting facility, in terms of what Wakefield bring to the game, it might be a bit controversial, but I'm not sad to see Wakefield go. You know, I was there with my kids. I was there with my wife. My eldest was fortunate enough to play on the pitch. He had his teammates there, people who'd never been to a rugby league game before. They'd been to Wakefield to see him playing. And do you know what? Wakefield, their ground, what they bring to Super League, they've had plenty of opportunities to maybe up their game. And unfortunately for me, it's time they spent some time in the Championship, regroup and come again. But for me, you know, Wakefield Graham, it is just not a ground. It's not a facility. It's not a place that is deserving of Super League status.
No, and again, it's one of those where have they been hamstrung a little bit in the past by the fact of this joint ground with Castleford that was always proposed, and have they put anything investment-wise on hold because of that? Now that's fallen by the wayside, so have they almost had to revert back to a plan B and play a bit of catch-up? But what they've done with the sort of end behind the sticks where their fans were, what they've done with the new stand, that looks okay if that's all you look at. But the stand where, you know, the Rovers fans were gathered,
huge numbers as well, Graham. I mean, great credit to the Rovers, absolutely fantastic support.
Yeah, completely sold out the ticket allocation, and I'm sure there were many getting tickets through the Wakefield home ticketing option. But yeah, as a place to stand and watch your rugby, you're almost a few feet below ground level before you even start watching the game. And anybody who isn't of a decent height in that particular crowd, unless you're at the front barrier, they were never gonna see too much of the game. But the actual infrastructure, and for someone who spends a lot of time wandering around the grounds in my job, you've got so many health and safety hazards there that I can't understand how they got through, you know, the risks, the fire risks and the safety elements of it. But they must do, obviously, because they're turning games out week in, week out, and the football team play from there as well as a joint venture. But yeah, as a stadium, as an environment, it was poor. You're buying your beer from a literally somebody's shed that's there, which is, you know, very similar to the experience at Cass. And look, we've not got the best ground, so it's very difficult to not look at our own as well. That needs some improvement as well. But you look at ours, and we ain't doing too bad.
I'll tell you what, Graham, I was just like Buckingham Palace compared to fucking Wakefield.
Well, yeah, I was just going to say it ain't too bad compared to what we got served upon on Friday evening. But look, they're making investment into it. Half the stadium is done with the two stands that are improved. Not quite sure what they're going to do with all them boxes at the far end where the players come out of, and whether they're going to return them from a corporate perspective or not. But yeah, the near side where the Rovers fans were was very poor as an experience to watch your sport.
I'll tell you what, Dan, it feels like we need to get on the blower to Nick Knowles, DIY SOS, doesn't it, to see if he can come in and do a job on Wakefield's ground, especially where the away fans go, because, you know, it isn't fit for purpose, is it? You shouldn't be paying £25. Think of what you could go see for £25. Now, don't get me wrong, I'd spend 25 quid watching all Kingston Rovers all day long, but normally there's something else that comes with it as well, isn't there? If you go see a show, you go see whatever, there's a bit more behind it than just the spectacle of what's on the stage, what's on the pitch, wherever you go. And to be charged that and to be served up with them facilities, to be, like Graham said, served a lukewarm, watered-down beer in a shed, never mind the rat burger we managed to get hold of. You know, it's just they need some time to regroup and come back stronger, like we did. You know, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying we're perfect whatsoever, but for me, Wakefield Super League, not for them at the moment.
Yeah, do you know what? I'm going to come to Wakey's defence here. I'm going to step in and have a bit of a positive one. They've actually done something, haven't they? They built that stand.
Yeah, but why is it not ready? It's tough. I can't believe. Is it like the longest? It's not even, when we was there, it doesn't even look nearly two thirds ready. Like, how has it took so long?
Because I'm not on that job, that's why. no, I think at least if you look at Cass is horrendous, isn't it? It's Wakey, they're actually trying to do something, albeit a little too late. I think the thing, it goes back to the first sort of set of franchising. You were told you need to improve your facilities. Well, clubs just sort of knew that we don't, as a game, we don't stick at anything. So, like Cass, they didn't invest in the facilities. They just invested in the playing squad, and it paid off for them, didn't it? They got to, not now, obviously, but they was reaching cup finals, grand finals. Whereas Wakey, they did the same. Didn't pay off for them, really. Don't think they finished any higher than fifth, did they? But yeah, at least they're giving it a go, aren't they? But there's quite a few grounds in Super League, isn't there, that are awful. I think, like, go back to Cass, you kick the ball into touch, it bounces off the roof, and you get a mouthful of asbestos, don't you? I think that's horrendous, Cass. I think that's my worst for me.
Yeah, well, you know, by all accounts, they might be following Wakefield next season, but obviously that's still to come. Before we talk about Lee on Friday night, a couple of transfer dealings. Reece Butterworth signing apparently from Dewsbury for his third bite of the Super League cherry, I think. He's a hooker, Graham. I mean, I pose a question. Three hookers vying for two positions. Willie Peters said he wants some cover in that place. I mean, obviously, we play with two hookers starting and on the bench, so I suppose it's pretty prudent, isn't it, to get a third in there. Or you would say with Reece Butterworth from Dewsbury Rams, he's not a young 18, 19 year old, he's a 24 year old, and by all accounts his favourite to get the League One Player of the Year award, or he's in the reckoning for it. He's had a fantastic season. He started his career at Bradford Bulls, he went to Batley on loan, he then went to Huddersfield, went back to Batley, he went to York City Knights on loan, he's at Dewsbury. We'll see, won't we, with Reece Butterworth, whether, I mean, it's not been officially announced yet, but, you know, you'd imagine it's going to happen. Adding competition to places, and yeah. Matty Parcell, there's a big question mark whether he's going to be around at the end of his contract, which expires next season.
Yeah, so again, it could be that succession planning, that if they've seen something in a young prospect that they can get hold of now, that can work with Jez, that can work with Matt Parcell for, you know, for the season, get a year of learning under the belts and development, then you could have a ready-made replacement if Parcell doesn't get offered a new contract or chooses not to take up a contract offer after 24, if that's a possibility. So I think that's good succession planning. I think I read a few bits and pieces as well where it's maybe not a player for the here and now in this season. It might be something in the season two, season three, etc., that we can expect to see more of him with some good development under his belt. And I think he's about either a year younger than Jez or around the same age as Jez as well. So potentially there could be, if he performs to the right standards and gets an opportunity, it could be that we've got two ready-made nines there that are here for the next 5-6 years, working off each other. So again, I personally like the approach of that succession planning of identifying young players early and allowing them the time to develop with the players that ultimately maybe moved on, but they've still got the opportunity. You know, who can not fail to learn as a number nine from Matt Parcell? So put him in there with Matt Parcell and maybe on some occasions spell him with Jez or with Matt within games periodically through a season when the time is right to do so. But let him learn his craft with playing regular in reses, for example, being available for standby, but also on that development curve of lining off players who are proven Super League players and obviously now an international player with Jez as well.
Yeah, Dan, I suppose a slight caveat to that is Phoenix Lulai-Tuhai, who's coming from a lower league side. And at the moment, it's very difficult to pinpoint where he may have a future at Hull Kingston Rovers. Fullback, halfback, hooker. He's played a few roles and he's struggling maybe to get a place in the side. And I'm struggling to pinpoint where he may get a place in the future in the side. And I suppose it's okay bringing in these players from lower league sides, you know, League One, Championship. It doesn't always work out where that player then naturally just steps up and fits into a slot, does it?
No. I think if you sort of look at it in terms of where they'll fit in within the salary cap, I can't imagine like Reece Butterworth when he comes in or this young lad from Leeds, we're not going to be paying them big bucks, are we? It's a project, isn't it? Phoenix, it doesn't sort of work out for him yet. He's been playing a lot of reserve grade. He does slot in at Super League. I think he's played a couple of games on and off, hasn't he? But it's a project, and you might find a diamond. You might end up having somebody turn up for training for 3 years. But it's a gamble, isn't it? And if he does pay off, but if you sort of think, well, saved us spending big money on another hooker from the NRL or investing in somebody that might be a bit hit and miss from Super League. You know, you don't know what they're going to produce, do you? And you don't know what attitude they're going to have in training, whether they're going to take to full time. Because has Reece Butterworth played full time yet? Is that, as you don't know how they're going to
take to full time? Yeah, he played for Huddersfield for a short spell.
Yeah, so well, we'll see what happens, don't we? You know, I don't think we're breaking the bank to sign him, so maybe he's going to be turfing anybody out of position or preventing us from signing, spending money on anyone else. So yeah, I think you can really have a bad point to it, really.
Yeah, Dan, you mentioned him. I mean, it was announced just before we came to record the podcast. Hull Kingston Rovers have signed promising England Academy winger Neil, and forgive me for pronouncing his second name, to Shomobe, on a 2-year deal from the Leeds Rhinos. Willie Peters said, I watched Neil in the Yorkshire versus Lancashire Academy Origin game here at Sulbrook Craven Park. He's a big body and he finds his front when he's carrying the ball, and he's got some real speed when he gets going. We're confident Neil can apply himself and develop into a Super League player here at Hull KR. After signing for Hull KR, Neil Tshomobe shared his excitement to have signed with Robin. He said, it's an honour signing for Hull KR. There's a huge buzz surrounding the club at the moment, especially with all the new signings that are coming in. And I'm really excited to join the same environment as these players. Seeing how the club has improved over the past few years is incredible, and I can't wait to be a part of it. He's, 6'4". He looks very much in the mould of Dom Young. I mean, that's a heavyweight to carry. And if he comes into the type of player that Dom Young is. But it's, for me, Graham, the interesting part is that we've managed to prize away a promising youngster from one of Super League elite, shall we say. And we've managed to encourage him to come south, Hull Kingston Rovers. So maybe that's a sign of where we are in the game at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's probably that. And you look at, you know, some of those prospects that are League One player of the year, the a hot prospect who's had international recognition at academy level. You know, for players like that in the game now who are learning their craft, wanting to come here, that's got to be a feather in our cap for saying we're doing the right things. The challenge is always going to be, like we just talked about with Reece there, is that he's got to develop. He's got to, you know, he's got a few people in front of him. Is he a ready-made Super League player? Probably not. But is he going to learn from being in and around players like Ryan Hall, for example? How can you not learn from players like Ryan Hall? So, again, it's going to be one of those journeys that as Dan said, is it a 2 or 3 year project before we see the real benefits of him when he gets to 20, 21 years of age? So I think he's still only 18 now. So if he can get the right development opportunities on the pictures that I've just seen when the news broke, he still looks, dare I say, relatively slim and skinny for a Super League player. But as he matures and physically develops his body and his attributes, then, like you say, with that size of frame, and if he can add some bulk in the right areas and continue with that, having that pace and those attributes that you've talked about, then again, potentially, massive word, potentially, he could be one for the future for us.
Yeah. Dan, signings. Over the weekend, Jai Whitbread was linked with the Robins. Now, it's interesting with Jai Whitbread, isn't it? Because he's a quarter player. Obviously, if Jai Whitbread signs for the Robins, it means that either someone's departing or someone's quarter status has changed this season. It's gone a little bit quiet now because it was all big news, Jai Whitbread potentially signed for the Robins. It's suddenly gone quiet again about what's happening with him. Robins was supposed to be in for Luke Thompson. Apparently, there was a contract on the table for him. Big money move to Wigan, looks like it's happened. Rovers were in for him. There was a contract there. Understandably, I think Wigan offered a little bit more than what the Robins did. But Jai Whitbread, I mean, it's just a big question mark, isn't it? Because you just can't see how he fits in without someone departing. I mean, no doubt he's a great player. He's done okay for a relegated Wakefield side. It's very hard to really say how good he is because he's not been at the top level of Super League performing week in, week out. It'd be a good, decent addition to the Robins, but it does leave a big question mark about, well, if he does sign, who's moving? What's happening with that?
Yeah, for me, it's a strange one. It seems like a bit of a knee-jerk one, but like Tyrone May seemed to be at the time. I think if he was English lad, you'd be brilliant. We've got a good lad on our hands here. You know, it's Vultures, they only got relegated last week, but I just can't see, unless there's an agreement, like it's all rumours, isn't it? Tom Opacic being homesick. If he is, and he's agreed that he's going, yeah, we'll fill the quarter space. But I can't see us releasing anybody. There's none of our quarter spaces that you look and think, I'd get rid of them. Not, they're wasting our time here. So it's a strange one, isn't it, really? I think it's been poo-pooed now by the club, and I think they've sort of gone, well, we were interested, but I think the press jumped the gun, didn't they, a bit on it?
Yeah, it looked like, Graham, there was a bit of interest. I mean, forgive me, I should have probably done a little bit more research. I mean, players like Matty Parcell and stuff, whether they start qualifying as non-quarter player, et cetera, I mean, it's not like the old days of Super League where basically you had to be over here for 2 minutes and then all of a sudden you could qualify as a non-quarter player, et cetera. The rules have been tightened up. Jai Whitbread, I mean, Would he add? I don't know. We look quite good in the props, don't we, when they're all fit? Like, do we need him? Unless the prop's leaving, I can't see where the place is for him.
Yeah, and it says they're a prop leaving, and if so, there must be a quarter player to leave for him to be able to come in. So that limits the options of who that is. But I think there's a pretty strong statement that I saw that was from Mrs. Kennedy, if she is, to say that all those rumours of Reece wanting out are complete nonsense. We're more than happy here And I think the fans' comments backed all that up of saying that it was, we're now getting to see the best of him, and why would he want to leave, sort of thing. So yeah, it's a strange one, because the way that the quota system works is it's quite rigid now in what you can and can't do. And it does appear that someone would have to remove himself from that quota spot, however you do that. And if that was the case of signing Whitbread, then yeah, it looks like he would fill that vacant spot. But would he benefit the squad? Would he add to it? Would he confuse it in the fact that we've then got another number to sort of fit into three or four places each week? And if we're all fit and healthy, then you've got potentially five or six people who can do that job. Two or three of them are going to be left twiddling the thumbs each week. Is that, you know, have we got the ability to keep everybody happy and offer them the right amount of game time before they become negative influences in the dressing room because they're getting overlooked? And, you know, we've seen how detrimental that can be. So, yeah, I think it's a whole strange one. And if what Dan said is correct there, of the club have poo-pooed it, then that makes complete sense. But why would it come to that in the first place if there wasn't, you know, why would it be put out there that we were interested in him if there wasn't space available to be interested in him?
Yeah, one that's going to burn for, I'm sure, a few weeks longer. Dan, we saw the Super League Dream Team announced. I mean, congratulations to our captain, our leader, our colossus, Sean Cadell, named for the second year in a row in the Super League Dream Team. The only Hull Kingston Rovers player to feature in that side. What was it, five Lee Leopard players in there? What did you make of the Super League Dream Team? Because there was a few noticeable absentees from that side, and there was a few surprise inclusions, not least Callum Watkins in the second row. Ellery Hanley, I mean, he said he wanted to create a Super League Dream Team that left people talking. Well, he's certainly done that, hasn't he?
Yeah, I cannot honestly for the life of me see where Callum Watkins was plucked from. I think that was such a bizarre decision. I mean, I don't get that one. I've made my feelings clear on Twitter, didn't I? Got a bit of stick for it about the amount of league players in there. They finished fifth, for God's sake. It's not. I mean, you got the likes of Asiata and that. Yeah, him or Minchella, probably going to be Asiata, and he's had a good season. You could have maybe looked at Batchelor for a position in there. Maybe
he was the one for me. Where over Watkins, I thought Batchelor would be.
Yeah,
if he was going to be,
that's my Rovers point of view. Obviously, I like James Bell at St Helens. I think he just goes under the radar. He's
very much in the same mould as Batchelor.
You're probably going to come on to it in a bit, but the coach of the year, that's another one, isn't it? That's caused a
bit of we're going to come on to the coach of the year, and then also we're going to come on to why you hate Lee Leopards. But Graham, I mean, Super League Dream Team, it's tough, isn't it? Because it's so subjective. There's no perfect formula for picking it. You know, it's a difficult one. I suppose the surprise was Lee having so many players in there. There's no doubt they've had a fantastic season, and for a side who was expected to be at the bottom of the table to be where they are and to win the Challenge Cup. I mean, the Challenge Cup didn't really come into it because this is the Super League Dream Team. So it's daft, but you have to dismiss the Challenge Cup exploits. So you're basing it purely on Super League and what they've done. I think the players for Lee probably warranted, and it's a tough gig in it, but it did seem to be a bit lopsided, and I don't know, maybe we're nitpicking, aren't we? I mean, probably Watkins is the one where you big question mark to go, hang on, how's he got in there of a probably three or four other second rowers in the competition?
Yeah, absolutely. I wonder if Salford have got some sort of arrangement going on with these committees who make these decisions, because there's probably a discussion coming up where we'll have a similar conversation about that. But Yeah, look, some you can't argue with as being best players in those positions, but for most positions, as fans, we have, you know, we have rose tinted glasses on about some of our own players because we see them week in, week out. Has Larry Hanley seen Batchelor all season long? Probably not. But is, you know, it's there, as I say, to, as you said, to get people talking about it, causes issues on social media, gets people talking about the game. Does it mean anything really? Well, it's a photo opportunity and recognition for players, I guess. And you know, you want the right players to get it, and a lot of them you could argue that there's two or three players.
The problem for me is whether it's criteria based, i.e. has that
what is your criteria, yeah.
Or is it basically me, you and Dan going, he's my best second rower, he's my best hooker, and then we just thrash it out? Because that doesn't seem very, I don't know.
This is rugby league, Chris. What do you reckon?
Well, I'll tell you what, let's bring it up then. So the coach of the year...
I think it's balls in a hat and pick one out. Yeah,
coach of the year shortlist was announced earlier today, and the nominees are, drum roll, Adrian Lamb, Steve McNamara, Matty Peets, and the coach of seventh placed Salford, Rowley. Now, Graham, I don't know what Willie Peters has done. Has he run over a cat? How has a coach in his first season of Super League, who's took a side to fourth in the table, not amongst the contenders? Bear in mind also, I don't know why they've done it four now, because it used to be three. So it used to be three coaches. Now they've gone to four. And the fourth is Paul Rowley of Salford, who's done okay. They've done okay. They've not had a bad season, but they've certainly not had a great season. They finished in the quarterfinals of the Challenge Cup, which I know doesn't count towards Super League Coach of the Year. How the hell is Willie Peters not got in over Paul Rowley? And it's nothing to do with Paul, because obviously, apparently, it's the coaches of all the other Super League sides who nominate, vote for their Coach of the Year. So what has Paul done that Willie Peters hasn't done?
I've got no answer to this, Jono, whatsoever. I'm just as dumbfounded as everybody else. And for those that may have seen John Wilkin on Twitter as well, his first statement when Jenna asked him the question was, where's Willie Peters in this list? Why isn't he considered? And I think you made the point on social media, Jono, about the fact that Willie Peters was trending as part of Twitter stories.
Willie Peters was trending on Twitter in the wake of the announcement that he wasn't part of the shortlist.
Yeah, I'm sure, in all seriousness, I'm sure if he was asked about it, he wouldn't necessarily give two hoots about it. It'd be more about what the team's doing, and he knows where they're at in terms of progression. He probably doesn't need that recognition to know that he's on the right track with stuff. I can't answer that question. Well, you know, Paul Wellens took a lot of stick from the Saints fans when they had a bad run, but look, well, champions, third, top, you know, joint top stroke, third, playoffs again. He's not got a look in either. So, yeah, there's a few anomalies, like we said, with the players. A couple of ones in there. You can't argue, I don't think, with Lamb because of what he's done. And as you alluded to, Jono, pretty much everybody would have had them down at the bottom of the league, favourites for relegation. And we were mentioned in the same breath as that, by the way, by some pundits as well. And Matty Peet, again, they didn't start sparkling, but have just been consistently good as the season's gone on and risen to the top. So, you know, you can't argue with that. And I think with Peet as well, what I like about him is he's honest as well. When he comes to these press conferences, win, lose or draw, he's not overly excited. He's not necessarily controversial. He's just honest about what he sees and how he talks. And the impression he gives is that he's a very likeable guy off the field in that respect. So, yeah, a couple of them I completely agree with. Scratching my head about Willie Peters and nothing against Paul Rowley. But like you say, what have Salford achieved this season to merit being put forward in those nominees?
Yeah, Kai Fowler on YouTube, I mean, he backs this up with 4 exclamation marks. The coach one is voted by other coaches, not a committee. Yeah, fair enough.
They maybe Dan, get looked after well when they go to Salford. I don't know.
Yeah, Dan, so I tell you what, if you'd have took out Paul Rowley and you'd have put in Wellens, most Rovers fans would go, do you know what? You can't, you know, well, club challenge, blah, blah. You know, he's led Saints to, you know, he's done okay. You could argue with that, couldn't you, and say, do you know what, Willie Peters probably behind them, maybe, you know. But I just can't see any justification whatsoever to see how Willie Peters is not in that four. How is he not in that four? It's just, I cannot believe it. And we talk about transparency in the game. Well, surely this is, we need to know how it's like the Bermuda Triangle, Area 51. How is Willie Peters not in that shortlist?
Well, for me, you look at the nominees. Matty Pete, he's probably the deserved winner, and he led Wigan to the league leader's shield. McNamara, probably done what's expected of him, and he. Catalans, in fairness, they bottled it, didn't they? They were there. They'd won it. They'd won the league leaders. So they bottled it. Lamb, I don't like Lidoa, so less said about that, the better. But he has brought a promoted side with more or less the same squad that they had last year. He brought them up to the top half of the table. Can't fault him for that. Rowley, I just think you've had an average season, haven't you? Fair enough, they're on a bit of a tight budget, but he's had Brody Croft, Snead, Ackers, and forget the fullback. But Brian.
Yeah, he got their Player of the Year award.
They've had that. That's a fantastic spine, isn't it? I mean, but they haven't made the playoffs, so I don't see what he's done that's sort of deserving. I mean, based on that, you probably think fifth place is Mark Applegate, don't you? Whatever he's the way it's gone, or Tony Smith. But
you know what, Dan? I do think Tony Smith should get some recognition for keeping that lot up and saving off from relegation. So maybe he does deserve a bit more recognition than he's getting. Dan, you've already mentioned Lee. You're literally on this podcast to tell me why you hate Lee. And we're playing him on Friday night, and you have got such a bee in your bonnet. You've been chomping at the bit to come on the podcast to show your displeasure and your disdain for the Lee Leopards. Brackets, Lee Centurions, Derek Beaumont, all in there, Hilton Park. What is it about Lee you just don't like?
Well, I think I tweeted that, didn't I, about the Dream Team, and I got a bit of stick, didn't I? Well, I said a bit. I got a torrent of abuse from Lee fans.
both of them?
Yeah, well, I was going to do you a little PowerPoint, to be honest, when you said to come on and tell us why you hate Lee. And then when you told me Degsy might be coming on, I was really excited. But yeah,
well, he's gone off the radar a little bit since.
I'm not surprised. That's out actually there. Got me list of why I hate Lee here. Various reasons. 2000, I think it might have been 1999.
Oh, is it dated as well?
Yeah,
settle in. Yeah. You know, settle in if you're not sat down comfortably.
We played them on a Thursday night. It was one of my first ever games I went to. We kicked 3 drop goals against us, taking the Mickey out of us, really. Ruin me evening. Where to next? He goes, jump forward a bit now. 2016, the Albert Kelly incident, you know, where he apparently gave him the team. You shouldn't like to win like that, should you? 2018 Championship Shield, Derek Beaumont. They only had a 9-man squad. They had to lend players off everybody else. So St. Derek really didn't cover himself in glory there, did he? He was trying to sell all the players off, wasn't playing them because they didn't make the top didn't pay them because they didn't make the top six. Jumped forward again, 2023. They beat us in the cup final. Just unnecessary, really, wasn't it? It upset me a bit. That ruined my holiday. Reynolds throwing himself on the floor. SKD got banned, didn't he, for that? It was a bit embarrassing, that, for them. 2023, they forgot they had to play a reserve team. Everybody else has managed to field one, but they forgot about that. No academy. They spent it on scouting for girls. The academy money, didn't they? And all banned all the gigs that they've had.
Some might say money well spent.
Yeah, it could be, but...
Decent band, the pop-up at, you know, average festivals.
Yeah, well, they were good, weren't they, 10 years ago?
which is, for me, it's a Derek Beaumont vanity project. Going on to Derek Beaumont, wearing leopard print to the cup final. Didn't like that. Thought it was very unprofessional. A bit embarrassing for him and the game, really, as a whole. Where have we? Oh, last night. We're up to last night. Embarrassed himself, didn't he? He was, didn't he mention that the league leader's shield was already at the league sports village and all the regalia for them for the presentation. So that's why their try was ruled out, because they didn't want to have to take it all the way down the road to Salford, did they, or to St. Helens. That's the exact reason why their try was ruled out. And he's basically gone on to say, because of that, he's not going to be investing any more money into Lee. So, because of one refereeing decision, one thing has gone out of an amazing season they've had. One thing has gone the opposite way to what he likes. So St. Derek's going to throw his toys out of the pram, isn't he? But yeah, I just don't... That's the end of my rant, apart from the fact that I just don't like this whole... how great they are. And they're a club built on sand. When he does throw his toys out the pram, they're gone. There's nothing there for him. And I think that's why I don't like him. But out of everything with this whole IMG thing, it's all about building sustainability. And that's what Rovers are doing. That's what quite a lot of clubs are doing now, looking at the future, when really it's a Derek Beaumont vanity project. And when he gets bored, that's it. Why aren't we raving about clubs like Rovers, teams that are actually trying to improve the brand, trying to make it more than just throwing money at a player? But that's my personal opinion. Yeah, I'm sure I'm going to get a lot of abuse off them for it, but, you know.
I tell you what, Dan, them three drop goals have really cut deep, haven't they?
It's one of my first ever games, and it upset me a bit, that.
23 years ago, and it's still haunted by it.
Yeah, I mean, Alex Moxon, he's put, oh, careful, Dan, Derek's a good friend of the podcast. I'll tell you what, he's come on the podcast and he said his piece about Lee, and to be fair, he respects Neil Udgill. And if you listen to the one he did after they'd beat us in the Challenge Cup final, about, you know, what Neil Udgill's done and the club and stuff like that, he does seem to be able to shoot from the hip sometimes, and he doesn't have maybe the same filter that some Super League owners have. Would the game be better with him or without him? I suppose that's for everybody else to decide, wouldn't it? But
if you're a Leaf fan, it's better with, isn't it?
Yeah. Well,
one of the cup, panic, essentially. So if I was a Leaf fan.
And what you would say is that in a competition that's gone a little bit stale, the fact what Lee have done has made the competition a little bit more exciting. But there is some things that are unpalatable. I'm still can't get over that Lee leopard shirt. I mean, it's like something you take to a shop yourself, innit, and get printed in 2 minutes. But Lee leopards, I don't know. I do think there's a big bubble around them. And a lot of people waiting for it to burst, and maybe next season is when it might happen. But Graham Lee, they're not very fashionable, are they? And they've punched above the weight. And I do think there's maybe a little bit of arrogance about them. And hopefully, through Rovers' professionalism, the way he responded after the Challenge Cup final, that actually Friday night is a great time to play them, because for what I've seen, yeah, they ran Wigan close last week, but they do look a little bit beat up. You know, a lot of players have played a lot of minutes, and players are doing big meters, big carries, blah, blah, blah. Actually, the fact they've won the Challenge Cup and they've got beat by Wigan and they've finished below us in the table, I'm thinking this is a good time to play him, actually. I think Lee are there for the taking. I don't think this is going to be the grandstand playoff game that Sky, the neutrals, are hoping for.
Yeah, I think just to pick up on your points there, you know, I think they've brought a certain entertainment factor to rugby, Super League, that was probably missing when you said about a stale product. So I think that excitement about the buzz and the what's a controversy, but the new ideas that have been brought around the whole branding piece, and that has been good for the game in terms of people getting hooked into rugby league. Whether they'll be here for a long time, again, as you both alluded to, I think many people are waiting for that bubble to just go pop. And they've been successful this year because they've managed to keep a very thin squad on the field, and they've not managed to pick up long-term injuries to their 1, 6, 7, 9. And for the vast majority of their games, they've all been on the pitch all the time. It'd be really interesting to see if they pick up any long-term injuries to one or two of those key positions, how they cope, because they've got a really thin squad in terms of numbers. They haven't got the depth, they haven't got the reses, etc. that Dan alluded to. So when they do hit a bit of adversity in terms of injuries, long-term injuries, suspensions kicking in, and having to really dig deep into a squad, that's going to be the interesting time to see how they cope with that, and whether the bubble burst there, whether Beaumont's threats are just threats to pull out of the investment side of it, whether he sees it through, who knows? But you look at the success they've had in terms of that team that's come up from the league below, and everybody was writing them off as favourites to go down, and have surpassed all expectation. That you've got to give them credit for that, because they haven't just you don't just fluke 27 rounds of Super League and finish fifth in the league. You've got to earn that. So credit where it's due for that. But yeah, they're not my favourite team either. But I don't think I'm as deeply scarred as Dan is by the whole experience of the Lee Centurion stroke Leopards. So yeah, look, credit where it's due for what they've done on the field. Interesting to see what next, the second season syndrome of how they perform, what happens when they hit a bit of adversity, how do they react to that? Can they maintain that success? And that's a we will see. But in terms of playing them on Friday night, I agree with you, Jono. I think they're looking like they've had a long season now. That was a tough game they had against Wigan. Mentally they've got they've had the defeat there, they've had the opportunity taken out of their hands of a home tie in the playoffs. They've now got to come to us where they know what it's going to be like. So I think, like you, we've got to be playing like Hull KR. We can get on top of them, and I'm confident that we can do a job on Friday night if we perform like we know we can do and we have been doing.
Yeah, Dan, Michael Matthew, well said, Dan. Totally agree. Bazza 85, I agree with Dan. Is it the nail on the head for me? A lot of Rovers fans dislike Lee. We had a bigger rivalry with them than Hull in National League One. Tommy Martin ripping us apart in 2004, etc. So, yeah, you've stared up. The boiling pot's coming to the rise at the moment, Dan. I mean, squad news for Friday night. Dean Hadley, he misses out, of course. Missed the Wakefield game, injured in the warm-up. Roy Milnes, he misses out. Jimmy Kynors comes back into the squad, as does Reece Kennedy. Now, it does throw open what our starting lineup and bench is going to look like on Friday night, because Staunton, King, Sue, Luckley, Kennedy, Abdul, Lytton, where do they all fit in? You'd imagine Batchelor, Lynette, Minchella for second row loose forward, but there's a couple of players there who are going to potentially miss out, isn't there? And which way would you go? Would you go with Abdul on the bench to give us some options? Would you go with Kennedy and go with a three props and a Lytton? Or would you go with Lytton, Abdul and two props? Where's your head at the moment with this?
It's a difficult one, isn't it? Because Abdul gives us that flexibility, doesn't he? When he comes on, you put him wherever he is on the pitch, he does sort of play in that extra halfback role, doesn't he? You put him at prop forward and he'll still be marshalling the troops on the pitch, wouldn't he? I'd probably go, I think you're going to have, he likes to start with King and Kennedy, doesn't he? So I think you're probably going to see Luckley, who's been outstanding recently. think Sue will get on the bench, maybe Stoughton and Abdul. I think that's where I'd go. I'd be looking to go. But then you're losing out Litton, aren't you? So it's, I mean, it's worst problems to have in the world, isn't there? I think we've had been in worse positions.
I'll tell you what, the one thing, and it was evident against Wakefield, is that when Litton came onto the pitch, his pace and his just speed of, not just him, his speed of feet, his speed of mind, his ability with a bot, he makes things happen. Now, Abdul makes things happen, but it's a bit of a slower pace, isn't it, the way he moves the ball around. And I don't know, do you think it comes down to...
The cup final, didn't we? The cup final, I think we left it too long to bring Litton back on.
Yeah.
I think they were tired, and we left it way too long to bring him back on because he had terrorised them. So hopefully we've learned from that, if he does get the nod.
Graham, do you think it comes down to Litton or Abdul on the bench, or can you see a scenario where they're both on there, or neither of them there? Or
I think it's going to come down to what type of play Willie Peters wants us, what style of play Willie Peters wants us to play. Does he want us to go out and dominate them in the middle, in which case then we're going to need plenty of the big boys in there? Does he anticipate that they're going to tire after 50, 60 minutes, and that's a perfect time to introduce the pace that we saw on Friday night and that injection from Jez Litton to get in and around those big boys, which paid huge dividends on Friday night. It's almost an embarrassment of riches that we've got in the fact that we've got players who are fit and playing well, and we've got too many of them, which is unheard of for us. And it was only at this time last season we were turning up with 16 men, let alone 21 that we could put on the field. So that's testament to the club, the strength and conditioning that we've got everybody in this position for this part of the season. In terms of the bodies, can you drop Stoughton after the performance he put in? Can you, what do you want to bring Kennedy in for? Has he got a specific role? Sue coming on and being sort of dynamic at the line and really barnstorming, is that what we're going to see from him? Does he get in and above Kennedy? King and Stoughton, King and Luckley, I think, are shoo-ins, given their recent performances. So, yeah, I think it's just going to be a complete reliance on Willie and the coaching staff deciding how they want their game plan to look, and then putting the right players in the shirts that can deliver, can deliver that on the day.
Yeah, Dan, are you confident on Friday? Do you think it's written in the stars that Rovers are going to win? For me, I'm supremely confident. I just can't see a way where Lee are going to be able to match our energy levels. And I think this is going to be, a statement victory almost, where, we're 5-5 on the row. I think this is going to be Rovers here. And then obviously it looks like, we'll go to Catalan. But I'm supremely confident. What about you?
That's what worries me, that I'm confident. I don't think I'm overconfident.
It's an unnerving position, isn't it?
The hope that kills you, Dan.
It'd be Wigan, wouldn't it?
It's Wigan on the Saturday, I think, Chris.
Wigan on the Saturday, yeah.
If Saints win, I think it is, isn't it?
If Saints win, yeah. Otherwise, we've got to France on the Friday, don't we?
Still ifs and buts, isn't there, about where it'll be. So,
but yeah, I fancy it on Friday. I mean, I don't let Lee bother me too much, do I? But I think, like you say, we'll do. I think the energy battle's the one that we need to win. I think that's how we're going to get them, and I think they have got the potential to hurt us. They've shown that all season, and the end of the day, they've been lucky with injuries and all that, but they've finished fifth, haven't they? They've been beating the top sides, same as us. I think they've got the potential to hurt us, but we just need to play our game, don't we? Turn up and play like we have done in the past 5 games and just be professional and do a job. Because that's what we have done against Wakey. Turned up, was professional, did a job. Turned up against Huddersfield, defended well, weathered the storm when we weren't playing particularly well, and then just did a job when we needed to. And I think that's what we need to do on Friday. I've said Rovers by 20. I think it is going to be. I don't think it's going to be another 52-10 or whatever it is, but I do think we'll. I think I said earlier 30, 30 points to 10 or something similar to that. I think we'll be convincing.
Yeah, no Zach Hardacre in the squad on Friday night for Lee. John Asiata, he is named in, but he's supposed to be knackered. I mean, whether he's playing through the pain barrier, playing with pain injections, whatever. We'll get another look at Oliver Gildart to see what he's like. Adrian Pape, Robbie Mullen. I mean, Tom Amione, he's managed to survive a suspension. It's crazy, really, isn't it, this match review panel? That could be a whole podcast in itself. It's going to be a very interesting night on Friday at Craven Park. Hull Kings and Rovers supporters, of course, can play their part in pushing the Robins to victory. As ever, make sure if you are going to the game that you're loud and proud and you get behind the boys. Graham, Dan, thank you so much for joining us on this week Red Robin Podcast Weekly, which is, of course, powered by Budget Size Auto Centre, the only car specialist supported by players, club officials and supporters. But for now, live, love, laugh and be happy.